Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Bowerly. Tom Bowerly. On News Radio 930 WBEN.
All right, thank you. And, you know, like everybody else, I'm trying to muddle my way through this coronavirus 19 situation. So I thought we would bring aboard an expert, Dr. Roger Klein, medical doctor. He's also a lawyer, is a clinical pathologist. He has subspecialty training in medical microbiology, board certification in molecular diagnostics, that is to say molecular genetic pathology, and he directs the types of clinical laboratories that would make the diagnosis of coronavirus. While a pathology resident at Yale in 2003, he saw the first suspected SARS case in Connecticut. And joining us live right now is Dr. Roger Klein. Dr. Klein, thank you for being with us. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I appreciate your inviting me.
All right. First of all, the numbers of positive coronavirus people in the United States. Let's start with that. If we know the tests are limited and tests are typically only being offered to those who present with symptoms, the number of cases in terms of a percentage of the entire population requiring medical intervention is likely far less than we might think. Am I wrong?
Yeah, so the problem with the testing, as you suggest, it's very heavily directed toward the most symptomatic, the sickest patients, the hospitalized patients. And what happens is we don't get an accurate picture of the infection because we're looking at a select population. If you test only hospitalized patients, for example, you would think that only that every person who had COVID-19 was hospitalized. And that's what the situation we find ourselves in now. We're not looking more broadly at an accurate representation of the totality of the infections.
In your opinion at this point, would you care to hazard a guess at the percentage of Americans who are or who have been infected by COVID-19 and maybe didn't know it or thought they had a cold?
So this is very sad, but I can't do that because nobody knows the answer. And I could say, okay, like when I look in New York and I look at the rates, even the national positivity rates, and I don't know necessarily where they're coming from, but some areas you might say, well, okay, there's probably 10 times the number. So you know, if you're looking at New York City, for example, and they're saying there's 67,000 cases, it wouldn't shock me if there were a million infections. But in Buffalo, I don't think it's probably the same situation, and certainly it wouldn't be that way in Idaho. So it's very difficult to do, and I think what the problem is we don't have surveillance data, and that's really where we need to go right now. I've been early on a proponent of testing, and it was, you know, and I was sort of a, you know, cheerleader for testing, and with the understanding or expectation that we wouldn't find all that many cases and we'd be able to monitor it that way. But what we did find was this has been circulating a while. It's spread quite a bit. We have way more cases than I think anybody believes, and we really need population-level surveillance data using what's called serology, and that will tell us people who have built up immunity and what's called an antibody, that it will tell us who's been exposed to it or, you know, basically been infected, and whether or not the infection is still acute, you know, because you can tell that by the types of antibodies that they have, or whether they're completely recovered. And I think that's really what we need to now to be able to make the types of estimates you're suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, when you spoke about your early call for testing, there really weren't that many tests available, and we are long past the containment stage, and now we're in the mitigation stage. And can you explain to us what serology testing actually means and how it would work?
Yeah, so what we're talking about now is diagnostic testing, and I will make the point that the reason we didn't have diagnostic tests is largely because the FDA wouldn't let people test. So they wouldn't let commercial labs test. They wouldn't let academic labs, academic medical centers test. And it was put in the hands of CDC, which really isn't capable of doing that. And CDC was called upon to send out kits to public health labs in the states, and they're not really so good at kit manufacturing either. So that's why we didn't have tests. The types of tests that are diagnostic, that are used to tell whether or not you have an infection, use a modality called PCR, which amplifies the nucleic acid. It detects the nucleic acid that is really the body of the virus. A virus is really just a nucleic acid surrounded by some proteins and fats that takes over your cells. What happens is when the virus takes over your cells, you end up producing proteins on the surface of those cells, and you develop immunity. You develop and something called an antibody that can bind to that protein. So it's able to attack and sequester the viral cells, the virally infected cells. And so what serology does is it measures or looks for the presence of those antibodies. You have more than one type of antibody. Some of the antibodies, like the term IgM, for example, is expressed early. That's a type of antibody that you get initially, and then you get something called IgG, which is a more permanent antibody, and that is consistent with a past infection. So these are really proteins that can bind to the virus, what they call viral antigens, that are expressed on the surface of cells. Your body makes them, and that's what we would measure.
Dr. Roger Klein, MD, is our guest on News Radio 930 WBEN. So would the serology test have to be performed on every single American?
No. So they're a blood test, by the way, so you don't have to go through this nasal swab. It's a blood test. Now, what you can do is you take a representative sample and do a statistical sample. Now, we're seeing a lot of modeling. And the modeling that we're doing, seeing the statistics, are giving very, very wide estimates from different statisticians with numbers that vary a great deal. Even among the one statistician, they say, well, it could be from here to here, and, you know, it's 100,000 people range. What you need to do is you need to get accurate statistical samples. And the way you do that is to regionally go to different parts of the country and measure people the same way a pollster, for example, would do it in a political campaign. You try to get a representative sample that is representative of not the entire population. The larger it is, the more likely it is to be accurate. But you're not going to, you don't have to do everybody.
So give us your thoughts, Dr. Klein, on this concept of flattening the curve. That is to say, basically, it seems to me like extending the duration of the virus while at the same time making sure that those in the direst need of active medical intervention have access to the services and physicians required.
Yeah, I mean, so conceptually what you're talking about is basically slowing the spread of infection sufficient to deal with it. So you have what's called an exponential rise potentially, and I'll get back to this in a second. And then the idea is an exponential means it's kind of like going up really fast. And the idea is to slow down that rate of growth to a stable level so that it doesn't overwhelm the health system. That's really what they're talking about. Now, we don't understand fully what this curve means. It's actually a pretty nebulous concept in if you were trying to look at it in detail, because we don't know how many of the infections that we're detecting are new infections versus old infections or older infections, because we're we've ramped up testing very rapidly in an extremely short period of time. And as we test more and more people, we don't know, you know, they may have been infected several weeks ago. They could have been infected 2 weeks ago. You know, you don't really know when they were infected and versus continual spread. And that's really the point. How much of it is new infection? How much of it is spread? We can't establish that. Serology would help.
Can we at least partially establish the rate of spread by the number of people requiring, for example, intubation?
Well, yeah, but I mean, that you know, it takes, you know, it could be 14 days or so before you're infected to the time you show symptoms, and then the symptoms could evolve over a period of days or, you know, even a week or two till you get worse. So it becomes difficult, but I think that their hospitalization rates and intubation rates, particularly because that's there's less discretion to that, I think are somewhat reflective of at least they're reflective of some point of spread. Let's put it that way. We don't exactly know when, but you know that you're seeing more and more new cases. If you're seeing more and more intubation, it's spreading. Let's put it that way. But I think again, it's hard to tell whether, you know, did the person get infected 3 weeks ago, or is it somebody who was just infected a few days ago?
Now, as far as social distancing as a way to so-called flatten the curve, has that ever proven to be an effective strategy?
Well, we don't have good data on it. Now, you know, it's not such an easy thing to measure, and most of the data are in flu. One of the problems is you can argue that it's not, you know, it wouldn't necessarily, it's hard to follow, to be truthful with you, and especially, you know, when you don't have complete buy-in. So what we're looking at mostly are models, and we're taking, the one danger comes in looking at, or the primary danger is in looking at models, which are just mathematical calculations that are based on a set of assumptions, and the answer depends on what you assume. The problem with treating them as if they're data is they could be wrong, and they could be very wrong. And I think, it's worrisome to see extreme measures, very extreme measures, that aren't necessarily proved to work when they could have devastating consequences for economically, you know, for the livelihoods of people, for their lives, for what they've built up their entire lives. When you're doing it for a disease that for most people appears to be very mild, rarely severe, atypically severe and rarely death, you know, rarely fatal. So you're taking something where there are probably many, many, many cases. We're seeing a select group of people who are the sickest. It's going to be so these are really the infrequent cases who we're presenting as the ones who are more common. And then, you know, the really rare people are going to die. And we maybe would be better focusing our attention on protecting those people. And as the president has suggested, you know, trying to move toward normalcy and getting back to work, because, you know, what good is it if you cure the disease but kill the patient?
Stand by, Dr. Klein. Interesting perspective. Dodger, he's a lawyer and a doctor, but I do not believe he's ever been a Dodger. Roger Klein is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Dr. Klein, let's talk about the lethality of COVID-19. Since the beginning, I have been using data from WHO, from CDC, as well as conversation points from Dr. Mark Siegel and others at Langone Health at New York University. Would you consider these to be proper sources for a guy like me without a medical school background to use?
I think they're, you're talking about lethality. I think they're proper sources. What I think is that we don't know, because we don't know the denominator of infections. And what you need to know to be able to figure out lethality is how many people are affected. You can't figure out the percentage of deaths unless you know how many people are infected. And what we're looking at, again, we're only testing. Our testing is heavily biased toward the symptomatic and actually the sickest patients. It's built into our algorithm. That's called selection or ascertainment bias. And it means that our results, the number that we're getting is wrong, and it could be off by a factor of 10 or more. You don't know. If we say here, for example, that the death rate is 1 to 2%, it could be 0.1 to 0.2%, which is similar to the seasonal flu. We don't know that answer until we know how many people are infected. And I think that is really the largest problem, one of the biggest dangers that we have here is that, you know, the risk of overreaction to something that, yes, a lot of people could die, don't get me wrong, and it's very tragic, but a lot of people also die from the flu. I saw an estimate that 81,000 people, I was questioned on this on the radio, this alarming estimate that 81,000 people could potentially die from this. Now, I don't know whether they will or not, and I don't, you know, there was, again, a very wide estimate, but that 81,000 is well within CDC's estimate for the flu for 2017-2018, and we didn't shut down the economy for the flu in 2017-18, and it's not the, you know, look, economy is sort of an abstract term. It doesn't involve people. What we didn't do is we didn't throw waitresses out of work. We didn't throw construction workers out of work. We didn't take away small businesses that people have built their lives to, you know, have spent their lives building and may never be able to get back again. We didn't do that for what is a number that's within a number of deaths that is within the range of CDC's estimate for 2 years ago.
So are we really left with a choice between reopening the economy, understanding that by reopening the economy, we are likely going to put the most vulnerable people, including those with undiagnosed arrhythmia, for example, at risk? And then if this economic shutdown continues, how many more suicides will we see? How many more alcoholics will be generated? How many more bad and unforeseen consequences could ensue as a result of the continued shutdown of America? It's really a dilemma, is it not?
It is a dilemma, but I am optimistic and positive about this. I believe that we are learning and will soon learn how to manage this infection the same way we manage other infections. We've got new tests out, lots of them, and that can be performed locally. Even at the bedside, there's a new test by Abbott that can be performed. You get the result back in minutes. There'll be others similar. There's 45-minute tests. And I think what's going to happen is we'll be able to get a patient in, we'll see whether or not the person's infected, and then we'll address it. We'll say, look, you know, if this is somebody who's older, we're going to take extra precautions. We've got some new medicines coming online too. But if it's a person who's younger, we're going to say, look, you got to stay away from other people, and we're going to isolate those folks and look maybe at their close contacts, and try to focus more on the individuals. Protect our seniors. I've got an 87-year-old father. I say to my dad, don't talk to anybody. Don't go near anybody. You can stand 6 feet away, but don't have people coming over. Don't interact with other people right now. We need to keep it to a minimum and protect the people who are most vulnerable, but then yet get us back moving. And hopefully, I think we're getting there. I think we're headed there, and hopefully we'll have an abate, you know, it'll abate a little bit with the season change here and the warm weather.
Doctor, quickly, let me ask you, do you support what Sweden is doing with its minimalist approach?
I'm watching it with great interest. Now, Sweden hasn't, they don't seem to be doing worse than their other Scandinavian counterparts or anybody else who's pursuing more aggressive
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, you know, that can change. So I'm watching it with great interest. It's an experiment, right? They're taking, you know, they're going, if we see that they have an explosion in cases that, and they seem to be doing worse than countries that aren't taking other measures. You know, I think it's suggestive of that probably wasn't the right approach. But right now, you know, their deaths per million population are within the range of people who are doing better, not people who are not, or countries that are doing better, not worse. Everybody's going up. You look at theirs. And I think last I looked, it was 11. It seems a little higher now. But Italy is 208 or 206 deaths per million population. Spain is 177. And we're talking about us at 11, in which that's crept up a bit. And I think they're in that same range. I'm looking here now. I think it's 14.
Dr. Klein, I could talk with you for hours. We are out of time for this segment. I hope we'll be able to touch base again maybe for a little bit longer and get more in detail on this stuff.
All right. Well, thank you. And I very much appreciate coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Dr. Roger Klein is a clinical pathologist with training in medical microbiology, molecular diagnostics, and he directs the types of clinical labs that would make the diagnosis of coronavirus. When he was a pathology resident at Yale in 2003, he saw the first suspected SARS case in Connecticut. So he's a lawyer and he is a doctor. A little bit of schooling there. All righty, it is 4:38 at News Radio 930 WBEN. We don't get to hear the guitar solo this time by Terry Kath. And Jimi Hendrix said of Terry Kath, the guitar player for Chicago, said, "Bro, I'm good, but your guy is better than I am." Seriously. So anyway, it is 4:38 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome to the show. My thanks to Dr. Roger Klein for joining us. He's got a little bit of a different take on coronavirus and our response to coronavirus. And like many of us, is anxiously waiting to see what the outcome is going to be in Sweden. Sweden is basically taking a laissez-faire approach to coronavirus 19 and is basically telling people to act responsibly. And before I get into what I want to talk about here, a couple of notes. Toronto has canceled all public events until through June 30th. So it is correct to say that Toronto has canceled all public events until the 1st of freaking July. And also, Camillo's Sloan Supermarket is temporarily closing for the obvious reason. So here we are, 4:39 at News Radio 930 WBEN. So I mentioned this yesterday, and I want to get your take on this because you know how I keep on telling you that for several weeks, I've noticed a trend in communication to me. And I've got the people who are out of work, who are really upset that they're out of work, and they want to be on the job, and they want a paycheck. And then I've got people who are told they have to work, and they're not real happy with their work environment or their work conditions. And at the same time, on a broader level, there seem to be a couple of camps developing. And one of those camps goes this way. We have completely overreacted to the coronavirus 19, that this virus is not going to be a killer for most people, that the most vulnerable need to take the most precautions against COVID-19, but that it is silly and self-defeating to shut down America for a disease that at the end of the day is probably going to have a death rate of under 1%, that the cure is worse than the actual health toll on the country. That is one camp that is out there. I find that that is especially the case in the camp that is not getting a paycheck right now. And then the other side of it is, we didn't act soon enough with coronavirus, and as a result, we're in the containment phase of, actually, we're in the mitigation phase of coronavirus, that this social distancing and shutdown of America needs to continue until further notice to flatten the curve so that medical resources are not outstripped by the demand for people who need the aggressive medical intervention and for the sake of our hospitals and our healthcare people. So is there, in a situation like this, is it okay if I ask you which side you're on, or if there is something in the middle that makes anything like sense? Because I mean, one of the things, for example, I saw an article about a 24-year-old who died. And you get into the article, and it turns out she had one of these serious underlying conditions. In her case, it was diabetes. And I suspect that with the younger people who are having bad results from COVID-19, that there were either diagnosed or undiagnosed serious medical issues underneath. Possibly, for example, an undiagnosed arrhythmia. Could be there, or some other underlying health condition that was not diagnosed in somebody in younger years. I've mentioned this statistic a few times, and I need to get the latest data because I keep on saying March 4th, and it's already almost April. But in Italy, as of March 4th, 66% of the deaths in Italy, because we hear all the time about Italy, and 66% of their deaths were among the elderly who had three or more comorbidities, something along the lines of diabetes, cancer, immune issues, hypertension, heart disease. You know, they had something else, two-thirds of the people. So, I mean, I wonder, and I ask this as a serious question, I wonder if we are accurate in saying, well, so-and-so died of COVID-19. Did they really die of COVID-19, or did they die from complications of COVID-19 that COVID-19 exposed, for example, lung disease? Or maybe they had a lifelong battle with asthma. Maybe they had undiagnosed heart disease. I mean, for some people with certain heart conditions, the first indication that something is wrong can be death. I mean, in the case of what I've got, Brugada syndrome, which is a very atypical arrhythmia, generally speaking, it is asymptomatic. You have no idea you have Brugada syndrome. The first clue you have Brugada syndrome is when you drop dead suddenly of cardiac arrest. That's your first clue. Unless, of course, you have an EKG and a particularly alert EKG person and cardiologist who knows what that particular waveform looks like. So as far as the cure being worse than the disease, is that the side you are on, or are you all about flattening the curve? And is there anything like a happy medium where people who are, let's say, over the age of 50 are strongly encouraged to stay home and strongly encouraged to avoid anybody? And people with pre-existing conditions known to exacerbate the effects of COVID-19, such as obesity, heart disease, and all those things I mentioned earlier, should we let the healthy people with no underlying health issues go about their business and let the less healthy people or the higher risk people, if they're going to work, work from home and let them self-isolate? Is that something that makes any kind of sense to anybody? Because I was trying to think about what a middle ground would be between the two camps that I see springing up. On the one side, the people who think this is a total overreaction, they want to get back to work, they cannot understand shutting down the United States of America for this disease. And on the other side, I've got the people who are all about flattening the curve, following all the guidelines, even if it takes 6 months. And I got to tell you, I don't know, in all honesty, I don't know that this country can exist in 6 months in its current state of economic inactivity. And this isn't about dying for the Dow. Right? This is about basically the future of the country. I would basically make the argument that the threat right now posed by what is going on in the economy could very well exceed the threat to this nation that we endured during the Civil War and during the Second World War. I mean, it's real serious. And you have a population out there of able-bodied people who have been sidelined, who have bills to pay and families to feed, and there's going to come a time, and I don't know when that time is going to be, when people are going to say, enough is enough. You know, let me get back to work. I'll take my chances. So where are you on this? I'm kind of curious. 803-0930 is the phone number. 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. Here's a text. I cannot believe you cut off that doctor to take calls from everyday idiots. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Texter, that you feel as though the rest of the listeners are everyday idiots, number one. Number two, the doctor had another appointment he needed to get. So I did actually contact his public relations person, and I said, anytime he wants to come on, he is more than welcome. So before you speak out of your ass, it's probably a good idea to make sure it's not a wet one, and you basically laid a wet one. But I think I know who you are, and whatever. It is 4:48 at News Radio 930 WBEN. So I want to hear from you, everyday idiots. Maybe we should change the name of the show. Tom and the Everyday Idiots. That's a great band name. Wait a minute. Phil, you have to look this up. Every time somebody says something that I think would be a great band name, it's already taken. So do a search right now, Phil, Everyday Idiots Band, and I'll bet you anything there's an Everyday Idiots Band already out there. We're waiting. Yep, Phil's got an answer, Phil.
I have found Bobby Bones and the Raging Idiots, but no Everyday Idiots.
Oh, there's got to be an Everyday Idiots Band. There is, is it Them Idiots or Those Idiots, the polka band? But Everyday Idiots, what a great band name. All right, we will take calls from you guys, you everyday idiots, coming up at 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. So give me your take on where we are with COVID-19. Is the cure worse than the disease, and what the disease is likely going to do to us in terms of deaths in America? The president coming up at 5:15 on WBEN. Here is Peter in Williamsville. Peter, you are on. What do you think?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to talk about one key word you got to remember It's called related. What exactly does that mean? Corona-related deaths. I take care of 95, 96, 98-year-old patients every day. Simple cold turns into pneumonia, turns into bronchitis, all sorts of different color fluids coming up. We throw them on antibiotics, you know, check on them with a nurse. We don't throw them on ventilators. We don't, you know, we check on them with a nurse at home. We give them fluids. And these are all people that have diabetes, emphysema, COPD, and they recover. We're shutting down the whole country for, you know, a disease where 80% of people don't even know they have it. So overreaction of just epic proportions. Ridiculous.
All right. Overreaction of epic proportions. And you are still working?
I am. I work every single day. Patients are very understanding. They let me come into the house. Some want a mask. Some do not want a mask. And CDC is recommending that we do not wear a mask at all.
Oh, no. That just changed. The CDC may begin to recommend we all wear masks.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the frustrations about this whole thing is what we're supposed to do seems to change every day. Because for the longest time, we were told, if you're sick, wear a mask. But if you're not sick, don't wear a mask. Now they're actually considering changing that to wear a mask. I went to the doctor today for the follow-up for the surgery last week. No, not that surgery, the heart one. And they basically did the questions, took my temperature, and then gave me a mask. It was a very hot fashion statement. Let's go to Joanne in Williamsville on WBEN. Hello.
Hey, Tom. It's your buddy, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
I wanted to know if it's true that Governor Cuomo is not allowing correctional officers to wear masks. And why?
I don't know. I know we have a lot of corrections officers who listen, and I'm sure we'll hear from them.
Pardon me?
We have a lot of corrections officers who listen, and I'm sure that they will let us know. I don't know that they're not.
Okay, great. Thank you, Tom.
All right, thank you. All right, if you're a CO, are you not allowed to wear masks, or do you not have masks? What is the CO policy on masks? You just shoot me a quick email, tom@wben.com, tom@wben.com. I would more like to know what in the hell they're thinking when they release 8 level 3 sex offenders from prison in Monroe County. If somebody's a level 3 sex offender, and they get COVID-19 and they die, the world's a better place. Let's go to Kevin in Tonawanda on WBEN. Hello.
How you doing, Tom?
Hi.
I've been working every day, and I've been out there in people's houses and just doing, taking care of their plumbing, and haven't had any problems. Everybody's been pretty accommodating. But I didn't get any phone calls or any letters from my mortgage company or my insurance company saying, don't make a payment, I don't have to make it. So I guess it could still work.
All right, you are still working. And do you believe that is the so-called cure worse than the disease?
It definitely is the worst. It's just, I've been going to my cabin every weekend, but I haven't had any problems or nothing. I mean, it's just overblown.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Now, I got to tell you that with the exception of Dr. Klein, and I put his information up on the Bowerly Facebook page, well, with the exception of Dr. Klein, I have not spoken with any physicians who believe that it is overblown. They're all at this point, and some of them have changed toward this position. They're all concerned. It is 4:56 at News Radio 930 WBEN. We've got news coming up. We'll take more calls from you everyday idiots. That was a text that came in. That's not me. And then President Trump at 5:15.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.